the I think people should know what our sound checks are. It's what you had for breakfast, right?
That's your That's your sound check.
No, it's a professional person's sound check.
I
sound check. Sound check. Sound check. Sound
I just
sound
fart. Check. I just go.
No, you
and
don't.
Then we're ready to go.
No, you don't. We all know I'm the farter here. I've lost my voice. It comes and goes. My voice is really bad because I went out last night. And it was one of the best nights of my life. Besides my wedding, it was one of the best times of my life.
Yeah, what did you do last night?
I went to a place called Club Broadway. And so I can't really... Oh, it kind of clears up and then it goes bad again. And basically, and it starts at 5 o'clock and ends at 9, which is fucking primo for an old cunt like me. Because I was like singing and dancing, having a great time. And I looked at my watch and it's 7:30. So good. You know what I mean? Like I felt like it was 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So, so good. And basically Club Broadway, and it was at Chase's in Chapel Street, which felt so weird. It was Broadway songs, the whole kip and caboodle, just Broadway songs. And you just danced and sang and they had drag shows and a cabaret and like a singer. But it was just fucking – and at last, that last 30 minutes was like – this guy was like, I'm going to put my dicks in all your faces. This is how good it's going to be. Like he just did like the classics, Les Mis, Hamilton, Frozen, Let It Go. Defying Gravity, like it was just like boom, 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 like the crowds were just screaming. You know, it's just really fun. I'm such a musical theater dork, and it's so good to just be surrounded by a bunch of fuckheads like me.
I love it, man,
mate. When you hear a group like hundreds of people singing that fucking Les Mis song, like, do you hear the people sing? Like, and it's my favorite bit in that song, where there's a part where he goes, my place is here, I fight with you one day more. It was real good, man. And I just like, this weird, like, guy turned around and we sang it together, like, to each other's faces. It was pretty funny. Dork, nerd. Fuck, I don't give a shit, man. I love it. Okay, I love it. And I listened to, on the way home, I listened to Hamilton and I was so distracted. I took the wrong turn off the highway. Ended up adding an extra 20 minutes to my trip. And then I listened to a bunch of Hamilton. And then I just made a musical theater playlist on Spotify. And I've been listening to it on the Bluetooth speaker. I just put it on shuffle. I'll just give you...
Such a nana.
I'll just give you
a musical theatre playlist that I've been playing it on the Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, and so number one, From Now On, Greatest Showman. From now on, news eyes will not be blinded by the light. How Far I'll Go, Moama, Let It Go. Whole New World, mate, Circle Life, Colours of the Wind. Dude, I got Wicked... Frozen, Hamilton, obviously, Lion King, Phantom of the Opera's, Jesus Christ Superstar, Moulin Rouge. I've got two kinds of Jesus Christ Superstar, just my favourite songs. I've got the Last Supper and a Gethsemane from the 1992 version that John Farnham sang. But then I've got Damn for All Time and This Jesus Must Die from the original London recording in the 70s. I mean, I've even got Evita. Oh, mate, before you came home, I was listening to Evita. Dude, it's so good. Should we talk about
You know what my favorite song from a musical is?
Wow.
Shut Your Fucking Face, Uncle Fucker.
Oh, yeah.
This is, should we just watch it real quick? The only podcast where one of the hosts is obsessed with musicals. I am Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 111 years at BCA to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner is the Italian Gelden.
Yeah.
She is big whoop, wanna fight about it. I love musicals. I'll fucking fuck you up, prick. For Stuka.
Stop the car. I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold and the piano's hot.
Did they play anything from old musicals? Like, yeah, did all of a sudden it was like, I just blew wind from the windy city.
Well, Chicago's old, like, you know, but then they did a chorus line.
Like Calamity Jane. I'm talking like 50s, long, 40s.
The Sound of Music, yeah.
Singing in the Rain?
No, but they did have Sound of Music, which is 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do re mi blah, 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 blah. But I bet you if they did Singing in the Rain, yeah, there would be. But it's really, it's about musicals, which Singing in the Rain.
Yeah. Is it a musical? Musical?
Is it? What? Oh, my God.
Are you genuinely asking me if Singing in the Rain is a musical? If
it's a movie.
It's not just a musical. What's The Lion King?
Oh, yeah, a movie and a musical. No, but. No, no, no. When I say musical, it's something that's on stage. But has singing... I don't, hey, I'm sorry.
These things aren't on stage. Moana's not on stage. Lion King didn't start on stage.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, I get... Well, I guess I see what you're saying, but I thought that Singing in the Rain has been made into like a stage adaption, but it hasn't.
I don't think... Well, like I've never seen it, and stuff. But it's still a musical.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that didn't play. Is that okay?
No.
No. Well, it's funny that I did that. It's funny on Saturday that I went and did that because on Saturday during the day, what I watched was the I Am Celine documentary on Prime.
Mm.
And I watched it. It goes like an hour and a bit, hour and a half. And I watched it and just like on the way to the show, I just put Celine Dion on my Spotify. I am having an absolute Celine Dionysons. Because, dude, listen, it's Jimmy. Celine Dion, holy fuck, I forgot how good she was. I'm not talking about not My Heart Will Go On bullshit. I'm talking old school fucking Celine Dion. Power of Love, Think Twice.
I love that song. It's the power of love.
No, that's the other guy. But like, and you know the song, baby, when you kiss me like this.
Well, only from TikTok.
Because baby. You love me. Dude. Celine Dion. And also, so the documentary I watched, that's what I watched this week. So obviously Celine Dion has kind of, she was booked to do a residency at, you know, they do the residency at Vegas
mm-hmm.
for like 2 years and stuff. Like Adele did it for a while. Britney did it for a while. She was doing
all
it.
All the greats, huh?
All the greats, but Adele. Adele's not great. You want to tell me Skyfall's not a fucking amazing song?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll go down in the pantheon of great artists, for sure.
You're such a fucking music snob. Listen to yourself. You can't fucking love music if you turn a blind eye to half of it.
I think you'll find I can, and you're I such have, a fucking, and I've done it my whole
you
life.
You want to tell me, and also Britney Spears has got some of the most, like, worldwide, yeah, like knowable songs, like besides Hit Me Baby One More Time, lots of stuff, but like Work, Toxic, like, oh man, you're crazy. Anyway, so Celine Dion had to pull out of they had to cancel a bunch of shows, and then she revealed I feel like this is like knowledge, where she revealed that she's got a rare neurological disorder. And it's basically called stiff person syndrome, and it's kind of like ALS, where in ALS people's muscles deteriorate from the bottom up, so you start losing the feeling in your toes, ankles, legs, blah blah blah. But with her muscles are not connecting to her brain properly, so she has like seizures. Where she's totally aware, like a lot of people have seizures and they kind of black out, but she's totally aware what's happening and her muscles just clamp up because they don't know to muscle. What the awful thing is that when they show it all through a documentary, the thing that brings on these attacks is like overstimulation. So she hasn't been able to sing because she's like, my lungs are good, but if I try and breathe in really big to get the big notes and stuff, her muscles are in the way because they don't move. And she has like, and they film her having an attack a bunch actually in the documentary, and it is fucking horrifying because she just can't breathe and she's aware. So she can't ever be left alone because if she has an attack, someone needs to be there. It is fucked. But also, she seems like a pretty nice lady. You know, she loved her husband. She lost her husband. She's never been with anyone else, and she never will be. She's like, nah, he was it for me. But I wish you were here when I was watching the doco, because she's got two twin boys, and they seem very like, they're always wearing T-shirts, glasses. Like, they just seem like, and they're very like, you know, they're like, love you, mom, you know. Sweet, sweet boys with a great mom. They've lost their dad. Anyway, she's like, I got to go see my son, Ness, and he's in, he's going to go to his room. And he's like, I guess like 14. And he's got a game, like they've got a gaming room where there's like four gaming chairs set up. And they're like virtual reality ones where it's like you've got a mixture of virtual reality stuff and the screens are all really curved. I've got to show it to you. When I see it, like, you know, and like the ones where seats can move. Dude, it was like the most, like the, because you're kind of watching it going, gosh, she's so down to earth and an old person. And then when she walks into this room to eat her oatmeal with her son and he has to like take off his headset because he's gaming, you're like, oh, you're fucking rich. Like, oh, my voice is getting better. I want to show it to you because you're going to go, fuck, those chairs are 24 grand. You'll know. Anyway, but that's what I watch. It's a really good documentary, man. She's a real nice lady. She's kooky, you know? I kind of like it.
Yeah.
What'd you watch?
I watched a fair bit of stuff in and out this week. I watched 1981 film called Fist, F-I-S-T. Written by Joe Esterhaus, who wrote Showgirls, Basic Instinct.
Fuck yeah.
A whole bunch of...
Showgirls, I'm a stripper, not a dancer. I'm a dancer, not a stripper.
Well, I read his biography, or I'm in the middle of reading his biography, and so I kind of got obsessed with watching his films, which is basically the point of biographies, is to sell shit. But the first screenplay that he sold... I might have told this story on the podcast before, but basically it was a lesson in getting fucked in Hollywood. He wrote... he came up with the story, wrote the screenplay, and then basically the story is about a union leader who, or a guy who becomes a union leader and sort of tragically dies to put the union movement forward in the 1930s, right? Esterhaus also learned to like move on to like less highbrow topics as his scripts went on as well. But Sylvester Stallone immediately like signed on to the project knowing what the script was, and then as soon as they started filming, immediately was like, I don't want that ending. You can't kill Rocky.
I'm
pretty sure I've told this story before. You can't kill Rocky. People don't want to see Rocky die. And Esterhaus walked away from the film, and then like basically the producer and the director of the film, who liked Joe Esterhaus, were like, hey man, it doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? Sly's the star, and we need him in the film to sell it. So like it's not going to run if he's not in it. So we're going to have to talk to him about, like, here are your two options. You can pull your script from the film, and they'll make it anyway, and it'll be even worse. The ending will be even worse, and you'll just get like a story credit or something. Or you can go down there, like wherever they were filming, Chicago or whatever. You can go down there, talk to Sly, and try and have some influence on his ending. Because all he wants is to not die. So you can just rewrite the ending, but just make sure that his... ending is happening, right? So he does that, and then Sylvester fucks him again, because after that meeting, Sly wants a screenwriting credit.
What's the movie?
Because it's called Fist. F-I-S-T.
Oh, this was the film.
Yeah, it's still the same
film. Oh, I thought you were telling me a story about another movie.
No, this is the same film. It was like his first film. And it's like the first thing that comes up. It's like directed by blah, blah, produced by blah, blah, a story by Joe Esterhaus, written by a screenplay by Joe Esterhaus and Sylvester Stallone. Jesus. And when you know the story behind it, it's so fucked to see equal billing for both of them, because all he's done is really ruin the script. No one knows the film. If they'd gone with Esterhaus's version, the film would be known. And Sly's actually doing pretty good work in the film as well. So he may have been nominated for another Academy. It's on the back of him being nominated for Rocky. He's the hot young actor. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But he fucked himself.
Dude, that's so fucked.
People don't want to see Rocky die. You know what I mean?
That's so fucked.
So watch the film. The film is actually pretty good. I also finally finished watching the second half, or like the rest of History of the World Part 2, the Mel Brooks. So, you know, if you love comedy or if you're our age or older, you've definitely seen History of the World. It's a Mel Brooks kind of sketch film about the history of the world. And this version, weird, like, executive producer. Did you notice the executive producers were Nick Kroll and
Wanda Sykes?
And Wanda Sykes are like the two go-to people that... Do you think that's strange? Like, they seem like strange bedfellows for Mel Brooks.
I don't know. I feel like Nick Kroll...
Because they don't even work together or anything. You know what I mean? Like, if it was like Nick Kroll and John Mulaney or... Wanda Sykes and Larry David, like people who had worked together previously, would make more sense.
But maybe they are mates and they were like, finally, we get to work together.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
well, it didn't come through on screen because they were never in sketches together. And it's pretty weak, right? You watched a little bit of it with me.
Yeah, there's some sketches are fun, but
it's not really off the mark. It's not a train wreck, but it's not. It's funny.
It's off the mark a lot. Like, when it's good, it's really, it's like, oh, that's really clever and funny. But, like, when they tried to do the thing about the Beatles being the apostles, I get, just because you're making the Beatles the 12 apostles and Jesus, that's not enough. So that joke.
It's a funny quip, right? Of like.
But that's a joke. That joke there, oh, look, they're doing the Beatles as the 12 thingos. You laugh in the first, you know, few seconds and you go, oh, ha, ha, ha. But then but that's the same joke that they do for the whole sketch that goes for 7 minutes. We've already laughed at it. So move on.
And they keep coming back to it. So just to paint the picture, the sketch is the 12 apostles as the Beatles in Get Back.
Yeah.
So, like, you didn't say that.
Oh.
So, Get Back, obviously Get Back had just come out when they were writing these sketches. So, it was like, let's do Get Back, but it's the 12 apostles in there rather than the Beatles. So, it's like this fly on the wall documentary shit. But, like, only one of the actors in Nick Kroll can do a half-decent Liverpudlian accent. Half of them aren't doing Liverpudlian accents.
I think they did it on purpose to make it as a joke.
I don't think so.
I think so.
I think certain actors couldn't do a Liverpudlian accent on the day.
But I think they've gone with that
to be like, oh, it's funny, but it's not actually funny. And it's actually like, that's how every sketch feels. It feels like it was like not finished in the room, you know? It's like, we'll work out the rest when we film.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's just weird. Like, there's a lot of weird, like, sometimes Nick Kroll, I really love Nick Kroll, and I think that majority of the stuff he did was funny, but he always kind of did these weird Jewish sketches where he was kind of making fun of being Jewish, but I was like, it just felt really tacky. Like, it just felt really hacky and tacky.
Oh, I think people were trying to write in Mel Brooks's voice, and it was not good. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder how much Mel Brooks is like 94. Like, how much interaction could he have had? You know, his name's plastered all over it. Mel Brooks, History of the World Part 2, the TV series. And like, he introduces the sketches. Like, you hear his voiceover. But I don't know, man. It's a pretty weak source. I was disappointed. Like, I'm a completionist, so I had started it, and I like Nick Kroll. And when Nick Kroll's on screen, I was interested, but any other time he wasn't, I was not. Mm. So, yeah, Fist, an old weird 80s film with Sylvester Stallone, written by Joe Esterhaus, and Nick Kroll's attempt to do Mel Brooks.
Joe Esterhaus always wrote Flashdance.
Yeah.
Produced Basic Instincts.
He wrote Basic Instincts.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's really cool. Should we talk about what we watched this week?
Yeah.
So we watched the documentary about called Bratz.
Bratz.
About the Brat fucking Pack. Brat Pack.
Yeah. From the point of view of Andrew McCarthy.
Yeah, I wish we had watched San Omos Fire leading up to it. Just well, to get
we've
a bit.
Watched it recently. Like, I mean, last year or so. We've
oh, I
it.
Haven't watched it in the last year or so.
We did. We watched it together. You showed it. I'd never seen it before. I watched it with you.
Not in the last year.
Oh, it feels like the last year.
I love that movie so much. But there were so many movies that I forgot that that this documentary touched on, like The Outsiders. Hmm. Right? Everyone was in that. Matt Dillon, Patrick Swayze, like...
Tom Cruise.
Mm. Incredible. But they're basically talking about he basically just reaches out to all the people that were in the Brat Pack and sort of because they didn't like the name Brat Pack because the article that it was based on kind of made him sound like a bunch of assholes and they were just young kids trying to forge a career in acting and it was like Andrew McCarthy was like, you know, he was like went to drama school, proper actor, did Broadway. You know, he wanted to be like De Niro and he's like, well, Spielberg's not going to hire me now because he thinks I'm a brat, you know. So they're just kind of – but it was good. But it was interesting because he had such a reaction to being called part of the Brat Pack, so much so that Molly Ringwald and Judd Nelson didn't do the documentary because they don't like that reference, like that they feel like really hurt them. But then you talk to like Rob Lowe and Rob Lowe's like, it's all love. Like, it was interesting to hear Rob Lowe talk about it and then Demi Moore. You know, I felt like they were really positive. Like, yeah, that happened, but look, you know, you are still the master in your domain. You still forge your own career. You know what I mean? Like I mean, if Judd Nelson's career didn't turn out the way he wanted to, like, you know, Demi Moore's a big fucking star, you know? And she was a part of the Brat Pack.
Hmm.
Emilio Estevez had a fucking I feel like he had a great career.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, Mighty Ducks was a good film, right? Men at Work was great.
Yeah, Young Guns.
Young Guns? Yeah.
The Loaded Weapon movies.
Loaded Weapon movies were great. Also, and he did a lot of writing and directing as well, and that's where
later
he wanted to be.
Later on in his career he did, yeah.
But that's where he wanted to be. I feel like it wasn't such a... Also, Molly Ringwald's had a pretty great career, I feel.
Has she?
I feel like she's done, mate. She played Fanny in... Franny in The Stand docuseries, based on the Stephen King novel, the same name. I feel like that's pretty good. I don't know. I feel like the documentary was really good for like nostalgia and stuff, but it went half an hour too long. Didn't need to be as long as it did. So much so that I left the room with what, 20 minutes left?
Yeah, you did.
Because I got it. Because I feel like they did unnecessary interviews with people that we didn't need. Like other writers, like they interviewed other like people who had nothing to do with it. Like someone who's younger than me, who's a writer now, talking about it, why it was so popular. I'm like, what do you fucking know?
Hmm.
Well, I don't know. Just interview the Brat Pack. I don't care about this producer, this casting director, this fuckhead. Interview the Brat Pack. But they needed to interview those other people to fluff it up a bit because Netflix loves fucking filming. They love producing something and making it longer than it's supposed to be. Hmm. It should have been 75 minutes.
It's on Disney Plus, by the way, guys. Don't look for it on Netflix.
It is on Disney Plus.
I've been thinking about this film a lot because on its surface, if you watch the trailer, you'll think, oh, Andrew McCarthy meets up with his old friends and talks about the 80s. Great. But in reality, it's not that. He doesn't really interact with anyone from the Brat Pack at all.
Mm.
And... the documentary kind of becomes this like, and I don't even know whether McCarthy's aware of it or not. It sort of becomes this like illustration of a guy who can't let go of a work like a group of workmates or something, or like the one person who still talks about, like, this is harsh for McCarthy because he's worked in TV for a long time, but it feels like the one guy who peaked in high school and can't let go of it, you know? And it's like, oh, yeah, me and all my high school pals, we're going to get back together and talk about how mean the teacher was to call us the Brat Pack, you know? And so you're sort of watching this documentary and he meets up with Estevez and Demi Moore and Rob Lowe. And what you realize is that none of them care about it the same way he does at all. Estevez is kind of like, yeah, I didn't like it at the time. I tried to distance myself from it immediately. So it shows that like Estevez was smart, but also came from a Hollywood family, because I'm sure his dad, Martin Sheen, would have said, fucking do not. You know what I mean? Like, don't do any more movies with those guys. You don't want this to become a thing. Like, if you want to be a serious actor and get nominated and stuff like your brother, then you've got to, like, distance yourself from that.
Mm.
And Estevez said to Andrew McCarthy's face that he did. They were meant to do a film together. And Estevez put the kibosh on it because he didn't want to work with anyone from the Brat Pack.
Yeah.
So then that conversation happens and you're like, well, McCarthy might be onto something here that, like, maybe did fuck his career a little bit. Maybe this article did, like, put him on a path to doing stuff like Weekend at Bernie's, because like he couldn't get other parts, you know, he's that guy. And so when we watched it on Thursday night, Friday night or whatever it was, my first instinct was like, sort of thinking about the film, I was like, this is like that guy who can't let go of that one thing and he's trying to make a documentary out of it, and it's kind of like his big selling point. I'm Andrew McCarthy. I was like one of the Brat Pack, you know. And so he's still kind of living off that, but also at the same time has this like real emotional trauma with it of like, hey, I'm not a fucking brat. And you know, and then like at the end of the documentary he goes and speaks to the guy who wrote the article for the New Yorker, I think.
It just felt nothing.
And even the journalist is like, well, dude, I'm not going to apologize to you because I'm proud of the term Brat Pack. It's lasted 40 years. It was a clever name. And like the article still is around today, you know? Like if it gave you some personal hurt, then I apologize for that. But also I was 28 when I wrote the article. You guys were 22. Like everyone he speaks to has this attitude of like, I don't really know why you're still talking to me about this. You know what I mean? Ali Sheedy was the only person who was like, yeah, it made me feel like shit. I didn't like like the other actors were like, did I like it? No, not really. Did it affect me in any way? Nah. Not
like
really.
Rob Lowe wasn't like that. I felt like Rob Lowe.
Lowe seemed to love it.
Rob Lowe was like welcoming him with open arms, and he's like, look, he's Rob Lowe seems very like, look, any publicity is kind of good publicity, but he seems very zen.
He was smart
happy.
Enough to write it. But also, yeah. Rob Lowe was going to fucking succeed no matter what they called him.
Yeah, he's so fucking hot.
They could call him whatever they wanted.
Oh, God,
and
he's hot.
He's like,
and he had a sex tape ordeal too.
Yeah.
But,
like, did, you know, were any of them, like, the funny thing is, and I think Estevez kind of is coming from this point of view of, like, would we have done anything, you know, maybe we're all just destined to do what we were going to do anyway. Like maybe the Brat Pack had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe it didn't. Yeah.
And it probably didn't. I mean, those guys were talented young actors in those films. But you're not watching. There's no one in that group of actors, except maybe Ali Sheedy a little bit in Breakfast Club in particular. Maybe Judd Nelson in Breakfast Club, where you're like, oh, I can see these guys doing like being De Niro or DiCaprio or, you know what I mean? The first time I saw Leonardo DiCaprio in a film was The Basketball Diaries.
Oh, yeah.
And that from that film on, I'm like, this guy is a great actor. I've never thought that about Emilio Estevez. I never thought that about Andrew McCarthy. I never thought it about Molly Ringwald. So my first instinct was like, McCarthy can't let this go. It's kind of sad to see him going around trying to talk to everybody. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know, like it is such a fucking vain and vacuous industry. It probably did have an effect on the kind of roles and stuff that they got. Because if you like
100%, it would have.
If you look at all of their careers, none of them. It's the line that McCarthy says to Estevez of like, once you've got that label on you, Martin Scorsese isn't calling you. Martin Scorsese doesn't want to work with a member from the Brat Pack.
I 100% really, and I think that's where a lot of the bitterness comes from, because they were all touted on being these big stars, and once they were labelled that, that's what the whole anger about the thing is that they were taken off the table. because it labeled them as not like, you know, Judd Nelson and McCarthy especially were really serious actors, and it made it seem like it was all a joke, and yeah, they got
that
really
they would be petulant children set, yeah.
And you know, and you, when you think of the films that came out around that time, like 85, that they could have done that were like really important, like I'm sure some of them were in Platoon, like Michael J. Fox was in Platoon, was he?
No, he was in another rip-off of Platoon. Like, Charlie Sheen was in Platoon.
Charlie Sheen, so not Emilio. No. This is the thing, right? So,
Charlie Sheen escaped all that. Well, he was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is kind of seen as a Brat Pack film, but he's only in it for like a minute.
That's the thing. So, it could have been maybe Emilio was on the cards and then Charlie took it because I was like, oh, he's part of the Brat Pack. Like, when Oliver Stone's looking to cast Platoon, you want to be in an Oliver Stone film. You want to be in
but
Spielberg.
But it's a counter-argument to this, especially McCarthy's part in the documentary. The journalist basically says to him in a kind of harsh way of like, I wasn't even really talking about you, man. Like the article is about Emilio Estevez, Judd Nelson, Rob Lowe, and Tom Cruise was there.
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
So, like,
so how did Tom Cruise,
without him saying it, because he's fucking Tom Cruise.
But how did he escape that?
Because he's
zeitgeist.
Tom. Have you seen Tom Cruise?
No,
in
but
movie?
I know. But like,
he's electric. No matter that, how much of a psycho he is.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is it just like that Tom Cruise was better than them?
He probably he's intense. He probably wanted it more than everybody else.
Yeah, because then he did Risky Business.
Risky Business is seen as like a Brat Pack film as well. Because that was that middle bit of the documentary that you got bored of where all the pop culture people were talking about. They landed on this idea of like Brat Pack isn't just like these seven people that McCarthy was talking about.
Mm.
It's like, it's become like a term like Britpop for like any British music that came out from 92 to 99 that has a guitar in it is Britpop. So the same thing now that like any sort of like YA film made from 82 to 90 is a Brat Pack film.
You think about like Tom Cruise, right? Rain Man, like he did Top Gun.
He's great
he did
in Rain Man.
But like so he, you know, so he was already on the up, but Rain Man is what really turned things around for him in terms of...
Turn things around? He was in Top Gun just before that.
But turn things around for him in terms of serious.
Oh, like people probably took him more seriously, yeah.
Because he was with Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a serious fucking film. Yeah. But you think about that role, that could have been Emilio Estevez for sure.
He had tried previously. Like, he's in The Color of Money with Paul Newman.
Mm.
As a younger kid, and he's like doing serious acting.
What I'm saying is that Tom Cruise got offered that role, but because those other guys were touted as the Brat Pack, they like McCarthy, Emilio, Judd, they could have been up for that role. Do you think
they
could have?
They probably looked at.
They could have done just as good of a job because it was that script that was amazing.
I don't see Judd Nelson in that, and McCarthy to me. He should have moved into being a villain. He should have started playing bad guys.
Mm.
He's got that. Even though he comes like, and in this documentary, I'm like, whatever angle I end up taking on whether he's like a bit of a loser who's like trying to reconnect with his famous friends or like, I mean, he's still famous too as well, but he does come across as a super nice guy. And I don't think any of this is sycophantic. I think he's trying to work something out. But like, yeah.
What
I think everybody else,
well,
she said, I think you're going to find this documentary is going to be an exercise in humility for you.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
And there's a part when no one's answering his calls and no one's really that interested in talking about this, you know, like, because obviously it's been a massive thing for him. And he's talked about his whole life and stuff. And then he's gone public with it. Like, hey, let's talk about the Brat Pack and everyone else. All the people who were sort of around it are either like, it's no big deal or I don't want to talk about it. And then everybody else were like, well, the Brat Pack's great, but it's not that big a deal. I don't see it as a negative. I don't think that like, I think everyone was trying to be nice to him of like, I don't think your career was ruined because of this article, man.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like Emilio was really, you know, that was really interesting. Rob Lowe is beautiful. Like, he's such a nice guy. Like, he's like, he just like warms because you didn't think he was going to get to Rob. And then Rob calls him, invites him over, hugs him. And then Demi Moore's beautiful. Like, they just seem like really nice people. The conversations
he has with Ali Sheedy, who basically agrees with him completely. She was like,
sweet.
Yeah, it made me feel like shit. It made me feel devalued. Made me feel like I was in high school again because I felt completely lost and alone in high school. And then this article comes. I just started feeling good about myself. And then this article comes out. And it's all anyone wants to talk to me about. It's like, oh, you're part of the Brat Pack. Blah, 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 blah. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, all the directors I love were called the movie brats. You know what I mean? That 70s crew of, like, De Palma and Coppola and Scorsese and Spielberg and, like, and they just wore it as a badge of honor. Like, they just kept, they didn't pay any attention to it. Like,
Ali Sheedy looks so cool, man. It's like, she just looks like the typical New York chick. Like, she's 62 and she looks great. But she's got frizzy black hair, wears her glasses, still has the bangs. And I could totally see her in some oversized cardigan, walking, like, going into the deli in New York City, like, just a real New Yorker. Like, there's
some New York City.
New York City. She's a real, yeah, she it's just so seems really cool.
That we keep doing that.
I love it. I love it. But just, yeah, something about her, she seems really cool. Like, oh, you know, if you met her in, you know, like, she's like.
She seemed nice. They all seem nice. Emilio seemed a bit distant with the whole thing, like he was doing it under duress. You know, like.
Yeah, that they were standing in the kitchen.
Reason he wanted to do it was to apologize to McCarthy for not doing that film. And that was it. And then he didn't really want to talk about The Breakfast Club. Well, yeah, I mean, he had said that he doesn't do, you know, because he was like, I get asked all the time to, like, do retrospectives about The Breakfast Club or Young Guns or, you know, Men at Work, Repo Man.
Repo Man.
You know, and he's like, I don't do it because, you know, I don't want to get categorized as, like, a washed up 80s
star. So why'd you do this? Because you called me. Because you called. I was like, oh, God, lame.
Well, they're actors. You know what I mean?
I don't know, man. I thought it was going to be better than what it was and give me information I didn't know, which it didn't. And I thought that they would talk to the people more and they should have talked to people who had nothing to do with it less.
Yeah, it kind of presents itself of like, like it's going to be like an Entertainment Tonight special or like the car, like, you know, the members of the Brat Pack on Oprah, you know, like that kind of thing. Andrew McCarthy interviews the other members of the Brat Pack. But it's not. It's like a 60-year-old man trying to like work his way through an existential crisis about who he is and what his legacy is and stuff. Yeah. And I feel like someone just needed to say to him like, hey, your legacy, man, is like, you're a pretty good actor who was in some very interesting films when you were a kid that leave a lasting legacy. He even says that to Rob Lowe where he's like, oh, it's really nice when people come up to me and talk about Pretty in Pink or St. Elmo's Fire or I don't know. He's in a bunch of other films as well that I can't think of. And it's like that would be enough.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that enough? And then you're like, you've been on a bunch of TV shows like The Blacklist and fucking, I don't know, like, you know, what most actors do. They like go and do recurring TV. Like, is Keith Sutherland sitting around going like, oh, I'm only going to be remembered for The Lost Boys? It's like, no, he does 24 and does other shit and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
nah.
Like, Keith Sutherland had one act of his career, which was Young Guns and fucking Flatliners and I just said the name of the film and I've completely forgotten. The vampire movie, fucking...
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
Yeah.
So that's one element of his career and then there was a lull and then he, like, moved to TV and did 24 and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm like...
But
that's it. And Andrew McCarthy did the same thing. I don't really understand, like, and also, dude, like, and maybe he did do this and I don't know about it, but, like, you could have, like, stayed, you could have gone back to New York and done stage, you know, like, if you were that serious about being a serious actor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's what, and I think that's the thing. It's like, all right, you want to be a serious actor? Just do theater, dickhead.
Yeah, like go back to New York and do theatre.
Just do theatre. Like all these people that complain about.
Like Matthew Broderick did. Like Matthew Broderick was the biggest fucking star in the world.
Yeah,
there was a car accident, and then you know, he decided he wanted to do Broadway. Serious acting, and he's been on Broadway basically the rest of his career.
Consistently on Broadway.
Yeah,
yeah, and then still does like TV things and blah blah. But oh yeah, man, I don't know. Maybe
you know who seemed the most well adjusted out of everybody in that documentary? John Cryer.
Oh yeah.
Like I've seen him interview. Like. Obviously, I have mixed feelings about John Cryer because he was on what I consider to be maybe the worst television show in the history of the world.
You think Two and a Half Men is worse than Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory.
Okay, right. Which one's worse?
Big Bang Theory. I hate Big Bang Theory.
Is worse than Two and a Half Men.
But they're both as I hate Chuck Law. I hate everything. I hate it. I hate that so much. But he's been in a bunch of movies that I loved when I was a kid. And he played Lex Luthor in Supergirl afterwards.
Yeah, he's Lex Luthor in Supergirl's great.
Like, and he does stuff like that where it's like, and I noticed there was a Superman logo in his house as well. And it's like, he did Supergirl because he's a Superman fan, right? Because he must be a trillionaire.
Like, he didn't need to do Supergirl.
He doesn't need to do any acting ever
again. He didn't need
to
do it. He did it because it's a villain and he never gets to play a villain. And it would have been fun.
Right.
Would have been so fun for him to do that. Good for him, man. Yeah. He seemed really chill. I like John Cryer.
And his whole thing is like, I don't even know why you're talking to me because I wasn't in it.
Yeah, thank God. But also, and he hates Charlie Sheen and Two and a Half Men and stuff, which is good. But he still did the show, whatever. How many grumps did you give the doco, Bob?
Yeah, I keep thinking about it. It's a really interesting, I think it's a really interesting look at an aging star or like, you know, a B-level star and like how they deal with that and what the consequences are of fame and publicity. And I think there is some interesting stuff in there, but I do agree with you. It's painted as being one sort of thing and maybe that's the marketing team's fault.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's not, so that might not be McCarthy's. But I'm going to give it 3 grumps because I think there's enough in there that's interesting enough to warrant watching it.
I think I'm going to give it 2.5. And half of that is because I love Rob Lowe so much. Because I appreciate.
You should have heard Stooks when they were showing.
God, I just love him.
When they were showing old footage of Rob Lowe, Kelly was literally creaming her jeans.
Dude,
there's like
seriously.
Sounds coming from the couch of like.
But his career is awesome. When you
look at Rob Lowe.
When you look at him in Wayne's World and then look at him in West Wing and then look at him in Parks and Rec. And he really dines and dashes too.
I mean, he's kind of done the same thing as what we were just talking about as well. Like
with John Cryer,
he's had his 80s career, you know, and maybe this is what McCarthy's saying, that everybody was a movie star and then they've all moved into TV and blah, blah. But, like, they're not – like, how many people are – like, I would say to him, like, so from your generation of actors, man, there's one dude who is still a movie star, and that's Tom Cruise.
Well, this is the thing. We all can't be Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly right.
Not everyone can be a ballerina.
And you're talking about being De Niro. He's the one guy from that generation.
Yeah, that's him.
Right?
Like, so yeah, you all can't have it.
Cruise, Brad Pitt's probably the next one. I don't know. But fucking
fuck
Ryan Gosling's the next
John
one.
John Cryer. Like, John Cryer and Rob Lowe have had excellent careers.
Yeah, man.
And it's been diverse and fun. Like, and even Rob Lowe, he'll do something for 2 or 3 seasons and move on. Because he gets bored, he wants to do something different. Good for him.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it is what, and I feel like if you're too, like, I don't know if this is the case, if you're too stuck up to do stuff that's like, to do Supergirl, then maybe that's your problem. Anyway, 2.5 grumps because the only thing I liked was when they did revisit people and when they showed footage from those movies, like Class and stuff like that. Like, I thought that was really good. Because that's what I want to watch. I want to watch a documentary about the films, but they did too many fucking interviews with writers or producers that had nothing to do with the time.
There is,
and just
definitely
asking
a 20
about it.
To 30 minute period in the middle of the film.
It was so weak.
That was
a lost interest. Couldn't handle it.
Pretty weak source.
Mate, it's 123 minutes. It should have gone for 60 minutes. You could have cut 23 minutes of people going, you know, back in 85, blah, blah, blah. When were you born? 92? Fuck off. 2.5 grumps. Anyway, and you gave it 3.
Yeah.
All right, my voice is really fucked.
Yeah, let's go. I need to eat and Kelly needs to not talk. Thanks to everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening. We love you.
Share the podcast and get it out there. That would be great.
Yay.
We love doing this. But
we're going to do promos this week. You'll see. You'll see.
We will. We love doing it, but we would love to do it to more people.
But to tell your
do
friends.
It two people,
listening.
Four people. But anyway, love you guys.
Let us know what you want us to do next.
Yeah, let us know.
I love you. I love you.